Welcome to Copyright Clearances podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, September 27th, 2019. Our weekly guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me today from New York. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
On Wednesday, Andrew, you attended a hearing in the Audible captions case, which now features some interesting new twists. In your reporting this week for PW, you noted that Judge Valerie Caproni hammered Audible's fair use argument. So let's start there.
Yeah, so on Wednesday, Audible and the plaintiff publishers had their first clash in open court, which was a hearing on the publisher's motion for a preliminary injunction. That, of course, would bar Audible from including any of the seven plaintiff publishers' works, in the launch of the captions program, which, of course, is Audible's controversial program to scroll a few words of AI-generated text on your device as an audiobook plays. Exclusively, this would be in the Audible app. You know, and as I noted in my story, and as you suggest, if the decision to issue a preliminary injunction in this case comes down strictly to the fair use question, Audible's going to be in trouble. Because over the course of this 90-minute hearing, Judge Valerie Caproni seemed thoroughly unmoved by Audible's defense of its captions program, and she was highly skeptical that Audible's plan to scroll these snippets of AI-generated text alongside its audiobooks should be called anything other than what it is, and that's reading.
So fair use is the go-to defense in copyright infringement cases. Tell us more about the fair use arguments in play here.
Yeah, so essentially, the heart of the publisher's case is that the program is a rights grab, right? Because, you know, turning audiobooks into captions or into distributed text, as they call it, is not granted here, and it should be a licensed right. Now, Audible's defense to that program, of course, is fair use. The publishers at the hearing this week were looking to enjoin Audible so that they could sort of stop any harm that they say this program is going to cause, while that larger question of whether or not it's fair use is worked out in the larger copyright case. So right now, the court sort of had to look at this very preliminarily and say, is there a valid fair use defense here? Is it likely to succeed? So on that score, opening the day's arguments, the plaintiff publisher's attorney, Dale Sandali, told the court that Audible's captions program was quintessential copyright infringement. And she was quickly engaged by Caproni, who, you know, to start out rather politely questioned whether this sort of clunky experience of captions could really be considered competing with the book. For Sandali, who had a strong day, that was a really easy pitch to hit. You know, she was especially well prepared for that question. And she responded that, you know, captions doesn't need to be a substitute for a book for it to be harmful or to compete with a book. Captions provides a reading experience, she stressed. And saying that it was something else just doesn't make sense. And over the next 30 minutes, Sandali very capably hit all the major points in the publisher's complaint. We've talked about them in the past. And she found a really receptive audience in Caproni, or so it seemed at least. Captions is not transformative, she argued. It's commercial in nature. And that, courts have held, is a particularly fatal mix for anyone trying to put forth a fair use defense. And despite the public benefit argument that Audible's been pushing, what's really going on here, Sandali argued, is that Audible is seizing what should be a negotiated right to gain a competitive advantage over its competitors. And if this was allowed to go forward, captions is going to not only harm the market for books and ebooks and immersion reading, which of course is a combining of the two. It also would weaken rights holders' ability to license their works in other markets. It would devalue and cheapen those rights by offering this thing as a free add-on. And the poor quality of the captions program, which has about like a 6% error rate at this point, that also featured pretty prominently in the arguments because the publishers argued that would cause reputational harm to the authors and publishers who might be associated with a, quote, shoddy program where their works were sort of wrested out of their control without permission. And I want to stress that last point because it seemed to especially hit its mark with Caproni as an example of the kind of irreparable harm required to win a preliminary injunction. And that's distinct from the market harm they're claiming at large in the copyright case. So as much as it might be, as moral issues might exist in copyright law, which of course they don't in the U.S., this was a moral rights issue, Sandali argued. The damage that this program would do would be impossible to measure for the authors. Money damages couldn't possibly make up for it, and it affects the entire industry. And I'm going to quote Sandali here. She said, this is a sea change, what they are trying to do, referring to Audible. And she pointed back to the court's gallery, which was chock full of publishers and authors and agents who are all there together. That shows you how dramatic it is what they're trying to do.
All right. So that packed courtroom of authors, agents, publishers, and others were looking on and got to hear the Audible side of the arguments as well. And what did they hear, and where did that leave Audible?
Well, it was kind of a bloodbath, and it was kind of cringeworthy at times, too, because it was all just so strained. And at times, yeah, it was a little off point. And you know, I want to stress that that was not necessarily the fault of Audible's attorney, Emily Reisbaum, who did a great job herself. But the judge clearly had strong thoughts about what was going on here. And she never really let Reisbaum present her argument before kicking off a grilling that, you know, I'm not sure was always on the mark.
And what kind of tough questions did Judge Caproni pose?
Well, to be clear, Audible's claim in the abstracts, it can sound kind of ridiculous. Basically, Reisbaum attempted to point out that the publishers were sort of mischaracterizing the program and its error rate. And she stressed that the captions program was designed to work alongside an audiobook, not divorced from it. And that it was about offering, a reading experience. And she didn't get far before Caproni interjected. "What do you mean it's not a reading experience?" Caproni said. "It's words." What followed after that was this lengthy, strained back and forth about sort of what constitutes reading and what reading a book is, with Reisbaum at one point suggesting that seeing words as you listen to them is, you know, something else other than reading. "The fact that you can see the words doesn't make it a book," Reisbaum insisted at one point, trying to convince the judge that captions is at its heart an enhanced audio experience. "Audio first" is what she said, not a book experience. You know, users can't flip forward or back at their own pace, for example, nor can the text be stored or shared or skimmed. It just scrolls, you know, 15 words on average at a time. The experience was designed to increase comprehension of the words that Audible customers have paid for. But Caproni was not buying it. They paid to have the words read to them, she pointed out. You know, and the sparring actually got really crazy at some points, and it clearly was frustrating Reisbaum as she was not allowed to ever get her argument sort of on track. At one point, the judge was likening captions to like retyping badly a manuscript, which sort of flummoxed Reisbaum and had many of us in the gallery sort of scratching our heads. You know, but here's an example that didn't make it into my coverage this week as to how strained the questioning got at some points. Judge Caproni asked how she might compensate J.K. Rowling if a consumer using captions had a bad experience and thought that the Harry Potter books were garbage because of that experience. Reisbaum was, she sort of scratched her head. She was like, "Well, captions isn't compulsory. You know, the user could turn it on and off if they don't like it. But that's not the point," Caproni said. "What if they like captions, but they think the book sucks because of the poor captioning? How does she deal with that?" And you can imagine, you know, exactly what a computer-generated, an AI-generated transcript might make of Albus Dumbledore, for example, right? But at that point, you know, Reisbaum, I'm sure she didn't do this, but I'm sure she just wanted to facepalm. Eventually, she just told the judge that she rejected the entire premise of that question. You know, the user, she reminded the judge, had bought an audio version, not a book. They were listening. They were not reading. And it's not like captioning or closed captioning isn't an accepted convention, right? Most people are well aware of what closed captioning looks like, and they've seen it in action, and they know that it can make some mistakes, right? So honestly, Reisbaum said no user would ever react that way, and it was a useless experience to try to judge that, much less base some sort of market harm on it. And I think that's kind of right. Nevertheless, the point was made. The judge, she was looking at this and saying, when you're looking at words, you're reading.
And earlier this week, Andrew, you reported that Audible had doubled down in its bid to get the copyright case tossed and restricted to a breach of contract matter. How did that argument go? Did it get any traction?
You know, at first it didn't get any traction. You know, Sindali, when the hearing opened was, you know, for the publishers, were prepared to open with a rebuttal of that argument for the publishers. And Caproni, you know, moved her along. She said she wasn't overly impressed with Audible's pleading argument there, and she wanted to get right to the fair use part. You know, and during its time, Audible raised the issue again. And the judge at that point, you know, she had to give them their say. She listened patiently. But as soon as Emily Reisbaum finished telling the judge why the case should be tossed and why it was mispleaded, Caproni said, "Okay, let's get back to fair use." But toward the end of the hearing, you know, when it came to the point of whether or not the publisher's case met the standard for granting a preliminary injunction, Audible raised the issue again. And this time, it appeared to get the judge's attention a little bit. Reisbaum said that the publishers had zero likelihood of succeeding on the merits of their copyright case, which, of course, is required to get the injunction, because the case was improperly pled. "This is a threshold issue," Reisbaum insisted. "The case first has to be pled as a breach of contract." So at this point, Caproni asked the publishers to respond to that, and Sindala reiterated that none of the publishers' agreements granted Audible the right to generate and distribute text. But that's a conclusion, Reisbaum pointed out, and it's not supported by the evidence before the court at this time. The parties have all acknowledged that they have a valid license agreement, right? The captions program is a program that works specifically with that licensed audio content. So without seeing the actual license agreements and where Audible is alleged to have breached them, the court can't know for sure that speech to text is not covered under those licenses.
Okay, this is getting a little hard to follow. You're doing a great job, Andrew Albanese. But tell us, we've talked about this point before around whether or not speech to text is covered or not under these licenses. What do you make of the argument that's in play there?
Well, I think it's ruthless. You know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know if it's actually on point or not. But if I were the publishers, who it sure seems made a strategic decision to sue as a group for infringement, I think this argument has to be a concern, because if the copyright case writ large gets tossed over this, I think it'd be shocking.
And if this matter has merit, Andrew, it can't be fixed by just repleting the case then?
Well, Audible says no. And in their filings, they point to why. They point out that each case is a contract case that would have to be pled by each plaintiff, because they're all bound by different license agreements. They all have different substantive terms. They're all governed by different confidentiality rules. They all possibly are in different jurisdictions. And again, I want to stress here what a truly hardcore move this is by Audible, because let's be honest here. Audible knows that its audiobook licenses don't contain any language that would explicitly permit the distribution of text. But they point out to the court that they don't. The court does not know this. So this is kind of a purely technical move, so to speak, right? What they're trying to do here is to just get the merits, get this case kicked out of a federal court, kicked out of a copyright case where seven publishers are fighting together, and push this case into seven or more individual cases where the publishers are each stating breach of contract, all in different state courts, where they can litigate, and this is probably key, or negotiate with individual publishers based on their agreements, not based on copyright law.
And as the hearing ended, there was a bombshell moment, or okay, maybe more like a firecracker moment, but it might yet come back to matter significantly, and that was in terms of the motion for an injunction. Even if the publishers had dominated on the fair use question, tell us why that might not be enough.
Yes, so the surprising moment came when Caproni appeared to just then realize towards the end of the hearing that the captions program hadn't launched and that a launch actually was not imminent. She seemed to have the sort of aha moment, like, why am I even bothering with this preliminary injunction? As you know, there's a stipulation in place that the parties agreed to that are keeping the publisher's works out of any launch before the injunction was decided. And also now Amazon has gone on record in saying that they're going to just launch the program initially with public domain works to a select group of high school students. So Caproni suggested, geez, well, you know, why don't the parties just use that stipulation and hold in place, which of course means not including the publisher's works in any plan and launch while the case is ongoing, and simply go to trial. She offered an expedited discovery and even offered to give them a trial date before the end of the year. But the publishers protested that strongly. You know, we beg you to rule on the motion, Sindali pleaded with the judge, saying that the uncertainty surrounding the Audible program was already impacting the publishers and harming their ability to do other deals that are in the works right now. But Caproni said, you know, this is only a preliminary injunction at stake. Even if I grant it, it's still uncertain, right? They could still go to trial and win. So why not just go to trial right now and resolve the issue? Again, Sindali said, no, please don't do that. They can't just do a head fake, Sindali said, referring to Audible's still unannounced launch date, adding that not ruling on the motion would give Audible a get out of jail free card. Now, I'm going to go back to what I've been saying all along in this case, and that's that something isn't quite right here. Because when has Amazon ever launched a product based on fair use? And in all their statements, Audible never clearly said how they would launch, when they would launch, what would be in the launch, when they launched. And this very clearly panicked or otherwise pushed the publishers into filing suit here. And the question I have still is why? Why couldn't Audible just be clear with the publishers what was going on here? What was to be gained from this exercise? And it appears Audible even had the court believing that there was an urgent matter at hand, right? That a sweeping launch was imminent. And now that that's not the case, does it give Audible an out? Maybe, I'm not sure. And at any rate, you know, it's not a get out of jail free card, Caproni insisted. I don't have any get out of jail free cards. And she was thinking on her feet was very clever here. What she told the publishers is, what I have is a chance card. You could still lose the motion. So what that all means for the fate of the injunction, I don't know. It's really hard for me to say. It's clear, though, at this stage that Caproni is not at all moved by Audible's fair use defense. But at the same time, there's clearly a few other factors in play here. At this point, Caproni reserved judgment for a later date, so stay tuned.
We will indeed. But whew, as I often say, Andrew, about the legal intricacies of copyright, if you're confused, you're beginning to understand the problem. And Rob Bonista, Publishers Weekly, thanks for joining us today on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Up next on Beyond the Book, data-driven solutions for publishing can lead to improvements in many areas, from manuscript workflow to peer review, audience development to market research. Yet publishing has a data problem, a deficit of accurate, relevant data necessary to manage in a world of change. At Frankfurt Book Fair on Thursday, October 17th, CCC's Chuck Hemenway offers insights on why better data is better publishing. We spoke recently for a special Frankfurt preview.
It's well documented that products that reach market with substandard descriptive metadata do poorly. They're not borrowed as much, you know, in interlibrary loan if it's books. They're not discovered well if they're journal products. The sales numbers prove that out and back that up. You know, regardless of your stripes as a publisher, if your intentions are purely good and non-commercial, then discoverability, dissemination, all of those things are front of mind. And those all require the same care and rigor and effort as the commercial publishers apply. So whether you're commercial, whether you're non-commercial, content products with better metadata go further.
Better data is better publishing, coming next on Beyond the Book. And for more on CCC's programs at Frankfurt Book Fair, go to copyright.com/Frankfurt2019. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.